most of our early conversations are around business objectives and strategic objectives and growth objectives, and understanding what are the challenges to get there, right? And from our perspective, it's having conversations with business stakeholders, understanding technology, whatever's in place in the business, because everybody has something, right? Everybody has technology today. Many people have 30 years of technology, right? So understanding what exists, taking an inventory of the existing systems, the existing data sets, and thinking about like what are the business outcomes that we're trying to drive.
Every CEO is being told to use AI, but very few are being told the truth about what actually makes AI work. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. My guests today are Tim Kratak and Jason Brazil. Tim is the CEO and co-founder of Ironside, which is one of North America's leading analytics and data consulting firms, and they're a multiple-time Inc. 5000 honoree. Jason is the vice president of technology at Burn Bootcamp, which is a rapidly growing fitness franchise with nearly 400 locations. In today's conversation, we talk about what most AI discussions miss entirely, which is why every AI initiative is really a data initiative. We also talk about how lack of data trust will stall growth and how leaders can move from debating numbers to making faster, better decisions. Tim and Jason share a real-world case study of how data ownership, accessibility, and clarity unlock not just better reporting, but true what-if thinking, personalization, and AI-enabled growth. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Tim Kratak and Jason Brazil. Well, we all know that AI and technology is top of mind with leaders these days and has been for years, but with AI becoming so prominent, one of the things I think that people are really focusing on these days is like the data. We want to make sure that we've got clean data. We want to make sure that we trust in the data. And then how can we use the data to make good decisions? How can we use the data to make strategic investments and inform those decisions as well? So, Jason, let me start with you. You're the VP of Technology at Burn Bootcamp. So just briefly tell me, what is Burn Bootcamp? And then talk to me a little bit about where technology sits within your organization and the struggle that you may have been going through or are going through. And then we'll talk about what Tim does in his firm and how they can help you through that.
So Burn Bootcamp is about 390 plus gyms currently in the United States. We're all over regionally in the US, but specifically, we are a franchise organization, and that's really the key to the business model that we do. We're studio fitness, so we're not that HVLP and some of that high-end fitness. We are studio fitness, and we manage those gyms and all those franchise partners. Growing up from 2014, starting in parking lots, that's where our founder and visionary, Devin Klein, started in parking lots in 2014, and now we have over 390 gyms that are active and live. Primarily originally focused on targeted for women. Now it's women and their families and the number of franchise owners that we have. So we're really empowering a lot of these female members to become business owners along with their husbands. And so even though we have 390 gyms, I have 300 CEOs of their own little companies and we manage them in that way. I joined the organization about 18 months ago with a big background in enterprise level IT. So I did a lot of work for large restaurants and global retailers prior to, and it's really fun to come into that startup mentality where Burn is starting to really grow into the teenage years. Those growth between being a startup and growing as fast as you can into a mid-market enterprise that needs to have all of the things that we're talking about today and the partnership that we have with Ironside to help us really achieve data ownership. You spend so much time working with your POS and your CRM and all of these various solutions when you're a smaller organization that growing up means taking ownership of the technology stacks and platforms that you do. That's where my experience and expertise is, whether it's in loyalty or master data management, transactional data warehousing, everything we do digital for online e-commerce and everything from that perspective. But that data ownership is really that key topic of conversation. How do you go from letting POS and CRM own your data to owning it yourself, enriching it yourself, and then starting to really be able to leverage it and use it and make it actionable.
And Tim, people come to you when they either have a problem with their technology or they've got a massive opportunity or perhaps both of those. So tell me about Burn Boot Camp? What was the impetus for them coming to you? Add some additional color to what Jason just said here about you're the outside person looking in. So what do you see from your vantage point and having worked with hundreds, if not thousands, of other companies on technology projects over the years?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So we engaged initially with Burn and with Devin and Morgan and the team probably about 3 years ago. And at that point, they began to understand that the technology that was in place was not going to meet the needs as they grew the business. So we helped them put in place a cloud architecture where we brought data from, as Jason mentioned, their CRM, their point of sale systems, a number of their other tertiary systems, their e-commerce system, et cetera, together, worked to build that data platform to enable really a digital transformation, right? Everyone today, many of Burn's customers, many of the people in the world operate in the digital space, and their expectation is that you're going to have enterprise class tooling. And we partnered with the Burn team to establish and understand their priorities and help them through the process of beginning to build this cloud data platform, which would really be a foundation for them to continue to grow, to continue to develop, and really excited to help be part of that journey as that business has evolved, matured, and grown.
And Jason, from your standpoint, so Tim was just saying how, and you'd said this earlier too, about businesses start out, we bootstrap, we cobble systems together, and then, oh, we've got some success here. Now we got to get a little more sophisticated. We've got to create a robust system that has the ability to scale. So how do you think about it from a CTO perspective as the organization goes from a startup to like, oh, we're an established business that's growing really rapidly? How do you think about building the infrastructure, and how far into the future do you say, okay, we're going to create this tech stack today, and we think this is going to be in place for like the next 5 years on our growth? Or is it just continues to evolve forever because technology evolves forever? How do you think about the sizing of the tech over time?
It's a really interesting conversation in the world of AI that we live in now, right? It's AI being the buzzword that it is, whether you're talking about agentic or generative, how are you going to leverage that in your system? And the key answer to that is always data. So I completely agree with what Tim's saying, that the base that was laid down, so I was able to walk into at least having a data warehouse, an understanding of data ownership, the ability to bring multiple systems into a single data warehouse. Now, that's where you talk about how do we grow this more effectively. There's a lot of new things that are out there in data lakes and multiple data marts that we can start to leverage in the cloud, that the speed and of Amazon Web Services, the speed of Azure, the speed of what Snowflake allows us to do, and having partners that are experts in that, like Ironside, allows us to be able to move quickly through those technologies so that we make an investment in a data warehouse, as an example, as Tim was talking about, that we set up for the launch of our own private app and on-demand platform. That was the primary driver of that. And then from that one decision of we need to have an on-demand and we have our own app as opposed to letting our POS have the app, it was, okay, this is the data that we need in order to make that actionable. This is the platforms we need in order to make that readily available to all of our customers real time, for them to be able to book camp, for them to be able to process transactions, for them to be able to sign up and purchase contracts. All of those things needed to be available, and that allowed you to build a data warehouse to accomplish that. Now we roll into next year where we're doing these major implementations alongside Ironside called MyPlan. That's going to bring in PR tracking, macros, wearable data, real-time wearable data. That's where we start to go, okay, this investment in a data warehouse now becomes a data lake with multiple data warehouses and data marts off of it, all accessible to the cloud, all accessible to our digital apps, and we were able to grow on that path. So you make decisions that you feel like are 2 or 3 years, but if you make them right and with the right partner, they're going to be what you can grow into and grow from.
As I mentioned, you start out as the startup. Okay, you bootstrap things. You got all this data lying around. So walk me through the problem that you may have experienced when you mentioned I've got several hundred, quote, CEOs, these franchise owners that I have to deal with. Did they all trust the data? How do you get to the point where they can actually all say, yeah, that's like one source of truth there, and I believe this data versus, I'm going to keep some stuff on my own spreadsheet locally because I don't trust the corporate data here. How do you get through that problem?
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs And we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOCoachingInternational.com.
Yeah, giving them the visualization access to be able to do that. So it's investing in the data. So you've got to make sure you bring it in and understand the business logic. And that's one of the big keys is everybody has their own view or POV on the data. They may run a specific report in POS. They may run a specific report in CRM. And if they run it with a certain view, and then you show them data that it matches up with what the corporate or the HQ franchisor's POV of the view is, maybe it doesn't include certain things that they purchase. Maybe we have this thing called camp cards. Camp cards are, I come in X number of visits per month. I'm not a true member as far as I have an annual agreement. And so therefore that's not a member to HQ, but to a franchise owner, it's still revenue and it's still business, a member that exists in their gym. So matching that up, explaining to that, and then bringing the data dictionary. That's always where you start. Define your data dictionary, find all of that data, then get buy-off from your franchise partners. We have franchise advisory councils, technology advisory councils in our organization that we bring influential franchise partners into the conversation. We let them help us define the data dictionary. And then once it's time to roll that out everywhere, they have a lot more understanding and skin in the game and helping us say, hey, we defined this alongside your peers to make sure that this was the right answer. And then they start to trust it more.
Tim, walk me through the role that your firm plays in the types of things that Jason is just talking about here, in terms of obviously Jason knows what his business needs, but then they also rely on a firm like yours. So where do you come in? What kind of not only technical skills do you provide to implement what the vision is, but also what role do you have in shaping what that vision is for, say, a company like Burn?
I think the conversation about trust and data was really a big impetus to do this project from the outset. I think there was disagreements, there was multiple versions of the truth. And this is very common. It's very common in large enterprise. And Ironside has done business for 25 years and lots of Fortune 500 companies. And having a common understanding and having a single version of the truth and everybody making decisions on the same definitions is a challenge there. And it becomes more of a challenge when you have a distribution of franchise owners that have a varying degrees of understanding, right? That's the other aspect of it. So there's a maturity. Some of the franchise partners had really strong opinions and had strong experiences, and others didn't, right? So I guess at the end of the day, the real win was getting everyone looking at the same numbers, looking at the things the same way. That allows gamification, that allows common comparisons, that allows even a franchise owner that might own four or five gyms to compare performance across those four or five gyms. From an Ironside standpoint, we not only helped with the technical architecture, the technical decision-making, but also the facilitation and working with those franchise owners and understanding what their needs were and understanding how we can bring those needs that may be different from HQ's needs into the foundational solutions that were being put in place at that point, right? And the role that we played was a bit more consultative from a management perspective initially, then it moved into technology. Now that that foundation is in place, I actually think that AI has accelerated in its implementation over the last 2 or 3 years. So Burn is in a really fantastic position because they've chosen to make those investments. Many companies are in the first stages of, I need to organize my data. I need to bring it together. I need to own it. I need to pull it out of the disparate SaaS applications that I use to run my business and bring it all together. That's really the key thing of a cloud data platform is to bring data from multiple places together and align it and harmonize it and allow you to look at it on one pane of glass and then action it. And then furthermore, obviously the applications, Jason talks about My Plan, being able to personalize, right? That's really what this world is. That's what we all expect. We expect everything that we interface with to know us and personalize us and provide the input, and having that common foundation, building on that, allow you to then make smaller investments to get specific problems solved or opportunities realized.
I want to get technical for a minute here, because I've heard you guys use terms like data warehouse, data lake, cleaning up the data. Talk to me a little bit more about what does that actually mean? So every organization has data. Some of it is like very numerical and specific, and it's very clear that, okay, this is a number and we know what that means, versus we may have qualitative data, which is maybe we have recordings of client service interactions, and somehow we want to maybe use AI to take the transcript and do some analysis of that and maybe turn qualitative data into like quantitative information that we can put into this data lake or data warehouse. So is that true? And if so, give me a little bit of information about what do you do to move from all this data everywhere? Some of it is organized, some of it is qualitative, but we want to make it digital. How does all that happen?
I think that's really the key that we're talking about with data ownership is having someone that a trusted partner, but also internally that you understand the multiple data marts. It's not one data, big data warehouse anymore, right? It's multiple types of data. And that's why where the cloud technologies allow us to be able to execute that better, a data lake that we can just put all of our data in. We're not sure if we're going to use it, but we know we need to store it. And that may be in JSON files. It may be in large SQL files. It may be in comma delimited files, whatever. That type of data sources, it could be MP3s and MP4s, right? The types of data that we need to store that we're not sure exactly how we're going to use it, but how do we ensure that it's not on somebody's MacBook or that it's not stored somewhere in Google Sheets that we don't have access to? So mapping, that's a great exercise that can be led by strong data services partners like Tim and his team at Ironside. And then once you have that, now how am I going to make it actionable? When we talk about, for us, transactional data, that was the first data warehouse that we made. Every transaction we have, ensuring that that's the most financial performance, business intelligence driven data source. Let's make sure we have all of that down so that we can handle data integrity, that we know that we're matching all of our data properly, that we have all of that ready to go. And transactional data, master data management becomes a big important part. Am I ETLing that in every night? What is the frequency? How do I make that more real time? How do I make that data visual and make it actionable for franchise partners to make business decisions? And then with all of this other data, how am I going to start bringing that in and making it actionable as a CRM? Now I've got a member data warehouse, Data Mart. So maybe I've invested in Snowflake. Maybe I also need to invest in Dynamo, some more dynamic databases that are out there that are being able to say, hey, I'm going to make this more transactional because my member data, if you have member data, whether I think we're very blessed in fitness to have everybody's first name, last name, email address, phone number, all of that stuff without anonymous transactions. I come from the world of supermarkets and restaurants, and so much of our member data was anonymous. 35, 40% of people still walking in and using cash. And so we had these large CRMs that were trying to just get an email address, tie an email address to a transaction. And then we want all of that third party data, that first party data, that's every transaction that a member or customer makes with us becomes super important, but not as important as when we start going to Experian and Fiserv and all of these other data sources that can then add on to that data and make it so much more personal. Where are they shopping? What are their influences? Where are they spending their other money, their share of basket, their share of mouth, that we can come back and start to leverage from a marketing perspective to personalize the journey. And that becomes the building blocks for loyalty programs.
So this sounds like a lot of work. So let me direct this to you, Tim. So when you approach a big issue like this, take burn could be one example. You've got, again, hundreds or thousands of other companies that you've worked with over the years on this. How do you take like a big project like data and how do you still have the big picture vision of where we're really trying to go with this? But then also like, what's the first piece we're going to do and the second piece and the third piece? So Jason just mentioned you went to, I think, some of the transaction data that was like one of the first things because you could get like a good ROI on that. So Tim, from your standpoint, how do you balance? We want to have a big picture, long-term vision of what we're doing with this, but also what can we do right now that shows me some concrete results, get me some ROI, and a business person listening to this is going to say, yeah, I'm going to keep the big picture in mind, but I want some quick wins here too on this.
Yeah, I think it's really all about use cases, Steve. So for us, most of our early conversations are around business objectives and strategic objectives and growth objectives and understanding what are the challenges to get there, right? And from our perspective, it's having conversations with business stakeholders, understanding technology, whatever's in place in the business up, because everybody has something, right? Everybody has technology today. Many people have 30 years of technology, right? So understanding what exists, taking an inventory of the existing systems, the existing data sets, and thinking about like what are the business outcomes that we're trying to drive, right? We often are asked to, hey, we need a data warehouse, we need a platform, we need a data lake, what are all the terms that we've used. And our first question is why? What are you going to do with it, right? What are the use cases? We have that same conversation on AI. I can't tell you how many phone calls we've received of, hey, my board said I needed to implement AI, but I don't really know where to start, right? And from our standpoint, like we don't come in with technology and explain machine learning AI, which we've been doing for 10 years, or generative AI, which we've done for three or four, or try to get their head wrapped around things like agentic AI. We just talk about their business and we talk about areas of opportunity. And when you think about AI, the use cases that we find to be most successful are businesses tend to focus on the things that they don't do well. And we found that not to be a good recipe. What we found to be a good recipe is to understand what a business does well and then how do we make it better? How do we understand and learn from the experts in the business and then leverage essentially math plus external data, combining those key third-party pieces of data that Jason mentioned, combining it with the data that they already have to really improve the efficacy of the machine learning models, to improve the experience from a generative AI perspective. Our methodology is always focused on use cases. And then the prioritization of those use cases is much easier to understand for the business stakeholders than do I do my CRM first or my POS first, or do I think about my external vendors? We have many different customers in across a variety of different industries, and they can very conversantly talk about what their business opportunities are. They can usually talk about where their business challenges are, right? And from our standpoint, data and AI, there's so many opportunities to apply those things and then order the use cases. And typically we start and engage with one or two small use cases. We build trust and credibility both with our customer, our new customer, as well as the stakeholders within that customer, right? Because it's important. We want Jason's choice to use us to resonate within his business. So we want him to be successful in the context of his role. We want the business to be successful. And we do that from a relationship perspective and really focusing on the outcomes that the business stakeholders want to accomplish. It's not about a heads down, go build me this piece of technology anymore. It's always about how can we improve business. And then, if I may, you had asked a question earlier about structured data, quantitative data, and unstructured data. And I think one of the benefits of the advances in technology, specifically generative AI, specifically generative BI, is the ability to ask questions. The old way to do a dashboard or report would be, hey, I run the sales report and I put in my region, I put in a date time frame. Maybe I put in a format and I wait and it spins and it gives me something back, right? Where today the technology is faster, cloud technology is more performant, it's less expensive. It's less expensive to build and deploy and bring together. And then now with generative AI and technologies like RAG, which is retrieval augmented generation, I can bring in all kinds of unstructured data from PDFs, from project plans, from images into those analyses. So a business stakeholder can ask a question about the business and the quantitative metrics of the business, but I can also bring in, hey, these were the marketing offers and this was the ad and this was sort of the strategic piece that led to why we did this in the first place. And the tooling has become much more business friendly to go find the components of the business that make sense to answer the question that that stakeholder has. So it's just enabling an evolution of work. It's not just enabling an evolution of technology. It's changing with the way people interface with data.
You may have just answered my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So I think the three of us are probably old enough to remember the early days of personal computers, the early days of software. I'm thinking spreadsheets like VisiCalc and then Lotus 1-2-3 and now Excel. So it seems like back in the day, a lot of people were saying, well, like Lotus 1-2-3, that's like the killer app of the personal computer. That sort of enabled personal computers to be really effective in the business world. I think one of the raps on AI today is that what's the killer app for AI? Everyone's talking about AI, everyone's doing stuff with AI, but we haven't really, correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem like I hear a lot of business leaders saying, oh, we're doing this thing and this has made us this amount of money and this ROI and this is growing and that and the other thing. It's like Everyone's experimenting with it, but we're not seeing huge ROI on it yet. Now, Tim, you, I think, was touching on the use cases. A lot of people are doing lots of use cases, experiments, that sort of thing. Have we found a killer app, or should we not think of AI in terms of a single killer app versus what I think you were saying, Tim? It's more like it's enabling us to approach business and business decision-making through a new lens, which is we absorb all this data and information, we prompt it, and it gives us new novel insights that we may not have thought about before. So it's not a single app as much as it is a new way to approach business.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I was fortunate enough to attend AWS's conference a couple of weeks ago called reInvent. And Matt Garman, their CEO, made a statement that really resonated with me. So I'm going to share it. Agents will have as much impact on your business as the internet or the cloud. We are moving from a world where you use software to a world where software works for you. So for me, the concept of an agent and the concept of agentic AI, I believe, starts to get into the conversation of what is the killer app. And this is a situation where the agents are working on behalf of an individual. And there are plenty of examples where I ask a question of, hey, I want to go on a vacation. And what are the attributes? I want to go somewhere warm. I want to go in February. I want to go within 3 hours of Boston where I live, right? Okay, you can't do that. So you got to go 4 hours, right? So you have an interaction, you plan an agenda, and you say, okay, and it actually goes into your Delta account and logs in with your credentials and books your flight and knows that you like aisle seats and don't like to have connections and are willing to pay a little bit more money for that and knows you're a Hilton person on the other end, and it goes to your Hilton website and books that, right? And all of this stuff happens while you're sleeping or while you're on a Zoom call on a podcast, right? The bottom line is you now have the agents, which ultimately will have agency from each of us to go do things on our behalf while we go do something else. And that something else may be something more productive. It may be spending time with our family and a variety of different things, right? So the agentic aspect of it, to me, is the killer app. I do think that the foundations and the platforms are being developed and delivered by the major hyperscalers today. AWS is one of them. And that foundation will get built upon. And then we can all share in that development and that evolution and leverage things like the data platform that Jason and his team have built and leverage all of the value and benefit of the curation and the organization of data and services. And really, that's where we think this is headed. But not everyone is ready for that, right? And from our standpoint, like, our goal in engaging is to meet people where they are, right? That meet people where they are, both from a business journey and a technology journey, and helping them to be better and be efficient. And my advice from an AI perspective is you don't have to, you know, change the world. You just have to start. So start somewhere, do that POC, experiment with it, use a tool, like, really just get moving. And as you do that, you're going to learn more and you're going to get stronger. You're going to get smarter as an individual, as a CEO. And that's my advice that I often give people that ask the question of where do I start and why should I do this, right? It's coming, and participate, and you don't have to be an expert on day one.
And Jason, let's bring this back to your company. So as you think about it, Burn, is there a single killer app?
AI is a solution looking for a problem right now, right? That's really the key. So I think that's really the thing that we're working with Tim on is, how do you apply, and this is from a CTO, CEO lens of, is your business ready for agentic AI in the solutions and things that you provide? So as a service, we provide the gym aspect, the fitness aspect. Am I ready for a world where agentic AI, where we've given it this agency to go do things for us as members, as clients? Do I have the support systems to be able to do that? And the way we think about it, we've looked at what generative AI does to really improve marketing functions. It can come up with, I'll never write another job description. We'll never write another press release, right? Those are the cool things that we can make people more efficient, just like Tim was saying. Then there's the ability to find information. Most of us who started out in startups or even in large enterprise, we have all of our data locked behind these vaults of other systems that are not, there's no one search engine. You probably got a SharePoint implementation, a Teams implementation, an Office 365 implementation. You've got maybe a Fran Connect hub or some sort of data sharing source, some sort of operational tool, probably a digital asset management solution, a DAM, or you've got a learning management solution. You probably have a support tool like Zendesk. All of them have their own search engines, and all of your members and users and franchise partners are tired of going to five different places to find their data. The killer app that we see, BurnGPT. It's a large language model that has API access to all of those different systems that we can identify the most important data and information. And then we allow our franchise partners, clients, and members to search and ask questions and be able to bring all of those data sources into one. Whereas previously, there would be posts or emails or tickets open that said, hey, I can't find this. I don't know where the latest ads are for our winter promo. I don't know where the opening guide is. I'm a new franchise partner. I'm trying to do pop-up camps. How do I do pop-up camps? And it was spread across four different places to go find that data. They now have one source that they can ask a question, get a simple set of answers, but more importantly, get all of access to their data. That's a killer app, right? For a franchise that wants to open and train and potentially open tens, dozens of gyms a year, we've got to be able to get faster with that. And so giving them access to that data real time is a key thing. And then I think the second piece of AI, are we ready for it? Lead nurturing is a great example of, we do texting. So Steve, you want to go down to the burn down the road from you. You want to sign in via our location page, fill out an expression of interest form, give us your email address. And within 30 seconds, you should have a text message that says, hey, we noticed you just signed up on the website. Come back and do that. Today, there's a person that does that. Is there a reason that in the near future, that text is not happening by AI? We're already testing it. Is there a reason that the voice call that leaves a voicemail for you to say, hey, we noticed you had an interest in coming to camp. We'd love to get you signed up. Call us back. Let's get you in. Or even in the next 12, 18 months, that entire interaction that you are more used to having with AI, because today there are drive-through restaurants that you go to, you don't know that you're having a complete AI conversation. They're just ready whenever they have the next step to escalate that to a person. But most of that transaction is happening via AI today. And as we as a community get more used to that, there's no reason that in 18 months, that phone call to completely set you up for your first booking and your appointment and your contracts and your waivers is not all done by AI.
Okay, so let's zoom out and talk about an existential question here, which I think leads directly from what you were just talking about there, Jason, where we're going to use technology, we're going to use AI, and stuff that is being done by humans today is going to be done by AI tomorrow. So you two guys being business people, being technologists, how do you think about that question? Do you weigh the pros and cons of technology and how it might displace humans? Is that an issue? Is that part of the business calculus when you think about technology? And also related to that, a lot of people still like human interaction. And so how do you weigh like, well, we could automate that, but we think our customers would like a human to do that part instead of an AI texting you back and forth. So how do you think about the human AI ratio here, so to speak?
Yeah, at least in the near term, we're going to have to be able to understand the proper mix, right? It is generational as to how much you want to engage with technology. We know that most of the older generation, the boomers and the Gen X, definitely want to have a personal touch. As you get into millennials, we grew up in an analog childhood and adopted digital in our teens. And so that ability to, we're more natural. I want to complete more of my transactions online. Gen Z orders DoorDash 3 times a week. They're not looking for one-on-one interactions. And so from our perspective, one of the first things we did this year was we launched our web BA working with Ironside, which is effectively a fully online setup for being able to sign up for a lead, make a purchase, create your accounts, complete your waivers, and book your first camp to walk into camp a fully fledged member with zero people interaction. We need to meet everyone where they are. And so for the next 3 years, 5 years, we're going to be having solutions that are AI driven or AI led and yet people first, and allowing that to be able to be escalated to a person at any point in time and really not lose that personal capability. But there are a set of members, whether it's Gen Z or the upcoming Gen A after that, that they don't want an interaction, but they still want a community experience when they walk into your gym. So how do we make sure that we're doing enough for both? And then also, like you said, making our internal teams, allowing them to do high value activities, like having an interaction with you when you walk into camp and be ready to go, instead of a low value activity like making sure that we have your credit card right and we create your password and we make sure your waiver's filled out. I'd rather have you having that high value interaction of talking about the brand, starting the upsell, talking about our nutrition product, selling you on the activewear rather than those low value activities that AI can just take over.
That point is really, really valid. I think the relationship of a business with their customer is really important. And I think that, Jason, the way that you've put that, I think is admirable. And I think it's the way that we think about things as well. Unfortunately, some progress has an impact, right? And from our perspective, my biggest concern is actually in the apprenticeship and the development of more junior resources, right? When we build AI solutions, we may not need programmers anymore, but we need architects. Right. And how do we develop architects if those people don't spend 5 or 10 years coding and programming? Right. So to me, reworking how the maturity and the evolution of both our consultants, our customers, and their employees, that's something that is of concern. Obviously, we've all seen a major shift over the last 5 years with COVID and the move to remote work and Zoom and every other way to communicate. Right. I do think that those that are in that sort of 20-something generation have had an impact in terms of their development from a career perspective because they don't have the apprenticeship. They don't see it. They don't have the social aspects of it. So there are challenges that go along with that, right? And we look and work hard every day to try to engage and figure out ways to, manufacture interaction because unfortunately the world has changed and people's expectations have changed. And again, there's generational change. So at the end of the day, it's adopting. It's being open to the fact that technology is going to move forward, whether you want it to or not. And we just have to pay attention to some of the negative aspects or the less advantaged aspects of it. It is a challenge, right? And but at the same time, it's also not a reason to not do it, right? So from our perspective, it's we can get efficiency, we can get growth, we can help reduce friction, we can help reduce risk, we can add efficiency to a business, and it's really incumbent upon us to continue to feed that technology and that development.
And with that, let me just wrap up here. I want to ask you guys a final question, which is based on everything that we've talked about today, what would be one or two key takeaways that you want our leaders, our CEOs to really walk away with understanding?
It seems daunting for us to really come into that. All the things we've talked about today, right? They seem like huge, massive, multi-year projects. But I think finding the right partner that can come in and do exactly what Tim said. Architect is a terminology that we've used in technology for several years, and it means a bunch of different things. But ultimately, for me, it really means building the foundations that you need to be able to innovate on top of. Choosing platforms, building those innovations, getting that crawl, walk, run roadmap. An architect is going to come in, sit beside your team, listen to your business goals. And whether this is an internal architect like me, functioning as a VP of technology, or an external partner, if you're not quite big enough for that role, right? Like Tim and all of his team, we have great people on his team that have been the architects of solutions. And they'll not only build you a couple of small wins, you're not going to start out and say, oh my gosh, we're not going to get anything for 3 years. It's about finding the low-hanging fruit, delivering a couple of those key projects that build towards these platforms and foundations that you need. And then hopefully, by the time you get about 24 months into it, you realize, wow, we have data ownership. We have data integrity, where we have one version of the truth and one pane of glass by which we're to look at our business. And now we can start innovating and getting our data ready for AI in those ways. But along the way, we still delivered on a couple of little things, like maybe a mobile app, maybe a GPT, maybe some of those little wins that we could do just for doing that. And that's the architect defining the roadmap and helping you plot that course.
Excellent. Tim?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, there's really two things. One is with AI, do something, engage, get smarter, think about a small project, think about a small win, whether you execute it internally, whether you engage with a partner to help you down that path. There are amazing resources out there. The vendors like AWS that we work with are willing to make investments and help with those initial use cases. There's a really big opportunity to just do something small, as Jason suggested, and learn and understand. And the more that you interface with the concept of AI, the more you're going to understand where AI can have a really big impact on your business. And then the other aspect of it is, as you're growing your business, again, everyone starts their business and they get Salesforce, or they get HubSpot, they get QuickBooks, or they get NetSuite, right? They put these technologies in place, and all the data is stored in those technologies. And the only way to put them together is in something like Excel. It's a lot of work. It has problems. It's often not timely. The person who does it leaves. Like, there's all kinds of challenges, right? So, thinking about building that first data platform to start to stitch together the data, that is the foundation on which you can digitize and transform your business. And we work with some of the largest financial services firms in the world, and we work with mom and pop businesses that started within the last 3 or 4 years. And some of them that are mom and pop businesses that started 50 years ago, right? And they haven't been technology first, but getting control, organizing your data and leveraging it and figuring out how you can use it to be more effective and more efficient, that's really the first steps. And think about something that's attainable to happen in like 90 days or 120 days. Don't take on a project that's going to last 24 months before you can get value, as Jason suggested, because there's going to be fatigue, there's going to be frustration, there's going to be challenges, right? Pick something that makes sense, but that is going to move the needle and is going to make something better in your business. And we'd love to talk to you about how to do that and how to think about where to start and really think about how technology can enable your business strategy, your objectives in your business. Everyone sits down and does planning, and data and AI and technology should be at least a small part of that as you go forward here.
Excellent. Well, Tim, if folks want to learn more about what you're doing there at Ironside, what's the best way for them to connect?
Yeah, you can go to our website, www.ironsidegroup.com is a good place to go. There's lots of ways to contact us there in the CEO coaching community. If you have a coach, I have good relationships with many of those coaches. They would, I'm sure, love to connect you to us. A lot of different ways to do that.
Great. And Jason, if we want to get back in shape here, what do we do? How do we connect with
Absolutely.
you guys?
Yeah, burnbootcamp.com. Find the location near you and come join the community. Be a part of the smartest workout in fitness.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that. So please visit us at ceocoachinginternational.com. We can then set up a call and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.